Okay, the last when we met, we have covered chapter 2, verse number 50. Chapter 2, verse number 50. Up to this verse, Krishna has concluded the two main topics of Bhagavad Gita. And these two main topics are Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. These two topics are also the same topics which are presented in the Vedas. The Karma Yoga of the Bhagavad Gita comes from the Karma Kanda of the Vedas. And the Jnana Yoga of the Gita comes from Jnana Kanda of the Vedas also. So the knowledge is nothing different. In fact, Krishna is what we call carrying on that same lineage of knowledge which was given thousands of years ago in the Vedas, and he is now reinforcing that same knowledge in this dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. So up to verse number 50, he has concluded both these topics, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And if we will also understand from Krishna in the next chapter 3, verse 3, when he says, these are the only two parts which I have given. There are no other parts to self-realization, to moksha. There are only two parts. So we must learn and understand what are these two sadhanas and apply it in our lives. Having concluded his discussion of these two parts, in verses 51, 52 and 53, Krishna wants to summarize these two parts. So what does he say in verse 51? If you look at the second line, Tyaktva means by giving up or renouncing. What do we renounce? Phalam, the fruits. Fruits of what? Fruits or results of, go back to the first line, karmajam. Fruits produced by our actions, all types of actions, whether they are spiritual actions or worldly actions, if we follow this philosophy of Karma Yoga and renounce the results of our action, Krishna says such a person is called Buddhi Yukta. Again, for Karma Yoga, he uses this terminology called Buddhi Yukta. Why Buddhi Yukta? Because the intellect has to be utilized to guide our actions. Karma Yoga is not just simply doing actions, it is understanding and having the right attitude behind our actions. For this, you need Buddhi, you need to use your intellect, you need to gain knowledge. What is the definition of right attitude? What is the definition of right action? So Krishna says one who is yukta means endowed with this buddhi, with this knowledge of Karma Yoga, this wisdom of right attitude and right action, who has renounced all the results or fruits of the action. Again, when we talk about renounce the fruits of the action, it is not physical renunciation, it is at the mental level. What do we mean by renounce the fruits of actions at mental level? What do you mean by renouncing fruits of action at the mental level? Not to get affected. That means favorable situations, I don't get carried away. Unfavorable situations, I don't get dejected. I accept with a equanimous or
steady mind,
right? Samatvam. Remember, he said Samatvam Yoga Uchyate. The yoga is called Samatvam when you have equanimity of mind in regards to your action, in regards to your results also. So accepting everything as prasadam from God, such a person, Krishna gives a new title. He calls such a person Manishinaha. Verse 51, second line. Manishinaha. one who is possessed of this wisdom. Manishinaha means a human. So what is it? Why does Krishna call such a person a human? Only such a person who is endowed with the wisdom of Karma Yoga and applies it in his life, that person deserves the title of a human being. Why is that? Because you have used that intellect to rationalize your actions, otherwise you are no different than an animal, where you just act from your impulses or act according to your nature. Because you have made the right choices using your intellect, you deserve to be called a Manishinaha, a human being. And a Manishinaha, a human being, is one who has woken up to the highest goal in life. What is the purpose of this human birth? One who has understood very clearly the real true purpose of this human birth is to achieve self-realization, is to what we call be one with God. So when you have understood the real purpose why you have been given this human birth, you deserve to be called a Manishinaha. You have woken up to a higher reality. And there is a story about Lord Buddha. When he was wandering around the villages, he used to go and give sermons. And one day he came to a new village, and as he was walking to that village, a young boy saw Lord Buddha, and he was so mesmerized by his appearance, his brilliance, you know, sattvic, right? Sattvic gunas, those who have, you can see in these great Mahatmas, they have a kind of shining light in them. Aura, yes. So this boy, when he was so intrigued by Lord Buddha, he went to him and he asked him, "Are you some god who has come from heaven? Because you have that aura around you, something brilliant about you. Are you God who has descended from heaven?" And Buddha said, "No." And the boy said, "Are you some deva, some divine being who has been sent by God to this earth?" And Buddha said, "No, I am also not a deva." Then he said, "Are you some kind of superhuman being, some special human being? There's something special about you." And he said, "No, I am also not a special human being." Then he asked, "Who are you, or what are you?" And Buddha said, "I am Buddha, the awakened one. I have awoken to my reality. So I have awoken to my real nature. I am not a god, I am not a deva, I am not a superhuman being, I am one who has awoken to my reality." That is what is meant by Buddha, the awakened one. So we are all Buddhas also once we awake to this reality. Such a person, Krishna says, is called Manishinaha. And what is the result? What is the result of a person who follows this path of Karma Yoga? In the third line, Krishna says, Janma Bandha Vinirmuktaha. Three words there. Janma Bandha Vinirmuktaha. Vinirmuktaha, Muktaha means free. Vini, when the word VI is added, it means totally free. It gives more emphasis to the verb free. So Vini Muktaha means totally free. Free from what? Bandha, the shackles of Janma, of birth. How can one living with the attitude of Karma Yoga be free from shackles of birth? And here we have to understand that every action we do, motivated by greed, anger, jealousy, ego, lust, etc., all the negative qualities, lays down a seed in our karmic cycle. Every action that we do from a negative viewpoint leaves a seed in our karmic cycle. How is that? If I do an action and there is a pleasant result, a favorable result, and I get carried away, what is what is my, what we call emotion, I'm acting with ego. I get carried away. I think I am the one who's so good at doing everything. So I take full, what we call full responsibility, or I accept everything as a success. It is due to me. The success is due to me. Now what happens when I get a favorable reaction and I attribute it all to my effort? And I get so happy that I'm so good, I'm so clever. Then what happens? What happens then? So when the ego builds, what happens? When the same action comes again, I expect the same result. And when, therefore, the seed of that action now is now in my subconscious mind. I expect that action again to be successful. I expect the next thing I do also will be successful because I'm so carried away by my, by my greatness. And when it doesn't happen, what happens? Disappointment, agitation. And that agitation, disappointment itself again creates another karmic cycle again. Because anger arises, disappointment arises, agitation arises, and that leads to further action. So you can see you're planting one seed, leads to another action, there is a reaction, you plant another seed, and the whole cycle goes on. Action, result, ego, another action, another result, and the whole cycle keeps on going on and on. And this cycle is not only in this birth, but it carries you to subsequent births. So, how do we get out of this cycle? How do we break this cycle?
To have a steady mind.
Okay, how do we have a steady mind? How do we get out of this cycle? What? Unless we surrender every action to God. Isn't it? Unless we surrender the results also to God. Therefore, we do not take any pride in our action also. And every result we accept as prasadam from God. That means there is no more seed that is planted. In fact, this is one of the very, what we call, common questions that is asked even at the retreat. How many of you were at the retreat? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, okay. One of the questions that was asked at the retreat. I have the question in front. And this question is asked very frequently. Sorry. If we all come from God, then we take many bodies to get realization and moksha. Finally, we go back to God. Why this whole process? Why can't we stay happily with God in the first place? Very common question. Now, let us understand first. When we say we have come from God and we have to go back to God, this is not a physical journey. It is not God sitting somewhere and then He has created us and taken us and put us on Mother Earth. And then we have to find a way how to journey back to Him. We have to find some kind of special rocket or spaceship to reach back to Him. When we say we have come from God and we have to go back to God, what does it mean if it's not a physical journey? That realization is internal. It has got to come from within. So when we say we have gone away from God, what does it mean? What does it mean? Where is God in the first place?
In us.
In us, isn't it? So when we say we have gone away from God, what does it mean? How we become separated from God?
We put the body.
This is your mind, right?
Yeah.
This is your body, right? Your intellect is here, your mind is here, your body is here, senses are here. Where is God? Within, right? So when we say we have gone away from God, means what? This side is world, this side is God. Right? So our mind is now going towards the world because of our That means more rajasic, more tamasic desires have pulled you away to the world. So God is not sitting somewhere that He has sent us here. We are created by Him here on this earth. He is within us. But we are not looking within, we are looking outward. So the journey to God is not a physical journey. It is merely going backwards towards our real nature. Coming back to our real nature. We are like the rubber band that has been pulled. What happens when you pull a rubber band? It's at tension, right? Anytime it can snap. What is the natural position of a rubber band?
To be around.
To relax it back. So what we are doing is going back. We have to remove the desires. We have to remove lust, anger, greed from our mind. By removing this, we go back to God. It's not a physical journey. It's a mental journey. It's an internal journey. So don't think that God has made you somewhere up there and haven't thrown you down on this earth and you have to find a way back. He is within you. You have to find a way how to go back to Him, and that only way is to remove the impurities from your mind. When you remove the impurities from your mind, naturally you are one with God. And that's exactly here what he says. Janma bandha vinirmuktaha. When you don't lay the seed to future actions, there is no more cause for rebirth. And thus, the last line says, padam gacchantya anamayam. Padam gacchantya anamayam means what? Padam means the state. Gacchantya means you attain. What type of state? Anamayam, which is free from defects, free from blemishes. And this is not moksha. Don't get excited. This is not moksha. What does it mean? You will reach that state which is free from blemishes, free from dirt. Pure state.
Impurity. Free from impurity.
Free from impurity. What does it mean? This is not moksha. So what does it mean? The mind becomes purified, the mind becomes calm, the mind becomes tranquil. The process of karma yoga does not create any more seeds, and thus the mind becomes tranquil. It is not pushed and pulled by anger, greed, desire, etc. It becomes tranquil because every action you surrender to God, every result you accept as prasadam. There is no disturbance in the mind. So, this verse 51, what he is telling us is that karma yoga leads to tranquility of mind. And of course, the next, and if you want to understand what is this tranquility of mind, look at chapter 4, or what is this process of reaching a state of, you might have heard this word before, state of actionlessness. Have you heard this statement before? Right? State of actionlessness, meaning no action. Again, is it possible to remain in a state of actionlessness, not to do any action? So what is the meaning of, or real meaning of, state of actionlessness? I'll take you to chapter 4, verse number 18. Page 87. I won't explain this verse because it's a bit confusing now, but just understand this. He who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is wise among men. He is a yogi who has accomplished all action. Meaning, state of actionlessness, to put it very brief in this verse, is not physically restraining yourself, but mentally surrendering all actions to God. So, the actionlessness state is in the mind, not in the body. The body engages in action, the mind surrenders all actions to God. That state of actionlessness is the one that does not produce any more seeds, no more karmic reaction. And thus, that's why Krishna says here in chapter 2, verse 51, padam gacchantya anamayam. One reaches that state of, what was that word just now we used? Free from defect. Free from blemish.
Free from impurity.
Free from impurities. So that means tranquil mind, a calm mind. And we must understand why we must have this calm and tranquil mind. Because generally, when we face adverse circumstances, we can run away from them. But when you face a troubled mind, where are you going to run to? You can never run away. If you have not handled this mind, then you have a big problem. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita is talking about purity of mind to handle and face all kinds of situations in life. Dealing with the mind is the most important. And I've told this story at the retreat, so those of you who have heard it, you'll hear it again, but I think majority are not here, so you can hear the story again. So this is a story which is very, one of Ramakrishna's favorite stories. It's called Hole in the Dhoti. Right? Now, the story goes like this, that there was a rich man who decided to take up sannyas. He was not married, no wife, no children. He had a lot of possessions. So he decided to give up all his possessions and just take two dhotis. Why two dhotis? One to wear, one to wash. So minimum two dhotis and one Bhagavad Gita book. And he went and took sannyas right by the banks of a river deep in a forest. So every day he sat there wearing one dhoti, wash one dhoti, hang it up and read the Bhagavad Gita, do meditation. He was very happy. He had given away all his possessions. Then one day he noticed two holes. The rats were running around that place and they bit two holes in his dhoti. So he was a bit upset. Why should I have two holes in the dhoti? And he had no money to buy new dhotis. So he went to the nearby town and said, I am a sannyasi. Rats have bitten hole in my dhoti. Can you all donate to me two dhotis? So they gave him. He went back. Again, after a few days, rats beat a hole in that new dhoti also. Went back to the villagers. They gave him another two dhotis. Three times, four times, five times. After that, they were fed up. They said, we can't keep on giving you dhotis. What's your problem? He said, rats are biting hole in my dhoti. So your problem is rats. We give you a cat. Take a cat and go. Cat will chase the rat and no hole in the dhoti. So he took the cat back. The cats were chasing the rat and he had no hole in the dhoti. Few days later, the cat got hungry, needed milk. He is sannyasi, no money. So he went back to the villagers. You gave me the cat, now can you please give me some milk? So they gave him milk. He gave to the cat. Cat chased the rats and no hole in the dhoti. Again, few days later, cat became hungry, needed some more milk. He went back. The villagers said, why not we give you a cow? You milk the cow, take the milk, give to the cat. Cat will chase the rat and no hole in the dhoti. So he was very happy. Few days later, the cow was eating the grass around there. The grass all dried up. Again, the cow became weak. He went to the villagers and asked for grass. Again, they gave him one time, two time, three time. Then they got fed up. They say, why not we do like this? We give you some seeds. You plant a small plantation, grow some crops, sell us the crops, get some money. From money, buy grass. Grass give to cow. Cow will give you milk. Milk you give to cat. Cat will chase the rat and no hole in the dhoti. So he started. He had a plantation now. Everything he was carrying on. Some few days later, a big congregation came from the city. They heard about this great sannyasi who had given up everything. They were so impressed. And they wanted to see what a simple life is leading by the river bank. So they came. What simple life? You got cat, you got cow, you got plantation. What have you exactly left behind and come? He said, look at my problem. All because of two holes in the dhoti. I got a cat and cat, I got cow and cow, I got plantation and I got, and everything came back again. So the problem is not running away from situation. The problem is handling the mind. The mind. So that is the purpose of karma yoga, to cleanse the mind, to bring purity to the mind. How? By focusing on other people's needs and wishes, we do not only concentrate on our desires. We give less importance to our desires. Karma yoga way of life is to serve, to make sure that you are doing your duty and that others are happy, not yourself. So you move the focus away and that helps to purify the mind. Now, what do I do therefore with the purified mind? In verse number 52. When your mind becomes tranquil on this path of karma yoga, what do you do? So here in verse number 52, you see the line, the first word, yada. Yada means when. And many times in this Bhagavad Gita, you will find this word yada appearing. Then in the third line, you see tada. So yada means when, tada means then. If this happens, that will happen. If this happens, that will happen. Right? So it's giving you a very logical build-up. Earlier verse said, do karma yoga, purify the mind. Okay, now in verse 52 he's saying, yada, when at that time you are able to attain this tranquility of mind, right? He's connecting to the earlier verse. When by karma yoga you're able to attain tranquility of the mind, what happens? Te, the word te means your, then go down to the, you see, sometimes you might be confused why I'm jumping one word from first line, one word from third line. The reason is these verses are arranged in a poetical order. They are arranged in a way for us to recite, but they are not written in a prose form. So they are not to be read in a direct way. You cannot read, if you are trying to understand, you cannot read yada te moha kalilam. You cannot attach those words together. It is put there for you to recite in a poetical form. So there is a kind of a meter, 8 syllables in 4 lines. Okay. So don't get confused when I jump up. I'm trying to connect the word into one proper sentence. So yada, when this happens, the purification of mind, tranquility of mind happens, te, your buddhi, go down to the second line, your buddhi means your intellect. What will happen to your mind? Okay, what will happen to your mind when it is purified? He says, vyati tarishyati, it will go beyond. Your mind, when it is purified, it will go beyond what? Moha, delusion. Kalila means the dirt of delusion. When the mind is tranquil, when the mind is at peace, how? Through the process of karma yoga, I have discovered that I can be happy. By serving others, I can be happy. So what is my delusion? Or rather, what was my delusion? Now I have discovered this new joy. By following the process of karma yoga, surrendering all my actions to God, all the results to God, I discover that happiness. Then what was my delusion? Huh? What was my delusion? He says, when your mind is pure with karma yoga, you cross over the delusion. What delusion? That I can only get happiness through karma and artha, by grabbing more and more for myself. Right? Previously, before I go on the path of selfless action, I only think about myself. I think the more and more possessions I get, the more and more desires I satisfy, I can be a happy person. But now I discover through karma yoga that I don't have to go on grabbing and grabbing and grabbing. By giving, I found that peace of mind. I found that inner happiness. I found the true joy. So you overcome that state of delusion, that moha, that which you were in before. Right? You were in before that you thought that the more and more I grab, the more and more I accumulate, the more and more happy I get. But I have found a new type of happiness by giving, by serving, by seeing the happiness on other people's face. So, moha kalila means I overcome that dirt of delusion. That attitude of my actions that I can only find happiness by acquiring more and more, by satisfying all my desires. Now I focus on the needs of others, and I find true happiness from that. So, instead of artha and karma, I find that dharma and moksha give me more happiness than artha and karma. So I overcome that delusion. Just by how? Just by not changing the action, but changing your attitude also, right? So every action becomes a joy. Okay. Now, when you overcome that delusion, Now he connects on the third line, tada. Now what happens? You see, yada, when you do this, tada, that's what, now this is what happens. What happens? He says, tada gantasi. Gantasi means you will acquire nirvedam, state of nirvedam. Once you get over this delusion, you find happiness by giving, by serving, you will attain a state of nirvedam. What is nirvedam, this state of nirvedam? Nirvedam is state of dispassion. That means what? It means that through objects, through people, I can get happiness. Now I've discovered that actually by giving up, by what you call this, by detachment, I also can get through happiness also. I don't need objects, I don't need people to attain the state of nirvedam. By, on the contrary, by renouncing, by giving up all my inner desires, I find a new peace, I find a new state of tranquility. So I reach that state of nirvedam. That means I find the inner joy. I know I do not depend upon external objects or people for my state of mind. I discover this new joy, I discover this new peace within me. And what happens when I discover this new state of joy and peace by giving, by acting for the benefit of the world, for the welfare of others? Then he says, srotavyasya, srutasyasya. There are two. Srotavyasya refers to, now here the translation is, what is yet to be heard and what has been heard. So the word sruta comes from the word srunu, which means hear. But you have to understand one thing. When the scriptures say hear, it is only one of the senses. What they often refer to is not just one sense, but all your five senses. So the word hear has got to be understood very carefully. Previously, I lead a life of what? I allow my senses to dictate my life. Whatever my eyes like to see, whatever my ears like to hear, whatever my tongue likes to taste, I go for that. I lead a life of sensual pleasure. I only want to satisfy myself. He says now, when you lead a life of karma yoga, when you find that happiness and you discover that joy is not just satisfying your senses, on the contrary, by renouncing things I find joy, that means what type of life I've led before, everything that has attracted my ears, gossip, wrong things I've seen with my eyes, wrong things that I've done, and what I'm about to do, these kind of things do not attract me anymore. So what type of things attracted me before, and what things I'm going to be faced by, the attractions of the world, they hold no more beauty for me. They hold no more attraction for me. So that means what? You have changed your whole way of living, your whole way of thinking. What used to give you so much of pleasure, now you yourself find no importance in it. Now this type of withdrawal is not by force. It is not because I cannot get this, I don't have money to buy this, so I give up. I give up this, I give up that. Not out of withdrawal, not out of force, but why? Why are you able to just give up? You find the type of friends who you used to run to, you're attracted by their company, you find nothing interesting. The places that you used to be attracted to go, you find that also holds of no meaning to you. Why is that? I'm sure all of you have gone through this. As you grow spiritually, you find that the old types of friends, the materials that you used to read, the places that you used to find so much joy, now hold no more attraction to you. For you. Why is that?
Transformation.
The transformation has come. Why? Because you have found the joy of giving. By giving, you have found the real inner joy. Of focusing on other people's needs, you have found that joy. Of doing all your action with surrender to God, you have found that inner joy. So all those things that you have experienced before, and what are the attractions of the world that are coming, have no more attraction for you. That is the change we can see ourselves. Here, Krishna, what he's saying is from Karma Yoga, purify the mind, purify the mind. You will reach such a state that you find what hell attraction for you before and what are the things that are going to come in front of you have no more attraction for you. So that is a change that we can see. Up to verse number 52. So your attraction to material world will start to naturally weaken. It is a natural weakening of all the attractions of the world. They hold no more attraction for you. And in fact, the scriptures, there's one very interesting story always given that comparing a dog, you know. A dog finds a piece of bone and it starts chewing the piece of bone. When it is chewing the piece of bone, it finds a lot of pleasure. But there is nothing in the bone. That's why we call what? Bone dry. Right? There's nothing in the bone actually. But by chewing the bone, the dog is finding extreme happiness. You know why? Huh? Why? Why is it finding happiness? Actually, the bone pricks the jaw and there is blood oozing out. The dog doesn't realize this. It is tasting its blood and thinking that the bone is giving the joy. It is actually his own blood that is giving him the joy. So the scriptures say, we are no better than the dog. Why? Can you see the allegory of the bone and the blood and the dog chewing the bone and thinking that this bone is giving me great happiness? This bone is producing the blood that is giving me the great happiness, not realizing the blood is from my own mouth itself. So can you see the allegory of our interaction with the world? Can you see that?
Yes.
We are chasing the world, hanging on to the objects and experiencing some joy, but the object is not giving us joy because object is made of matter. Object cannot produce joy. So where is the joy coming from then? From within. The joy we are experiencing is actually the taste of that anandam, the satchit ananda which is coming from within. We are just tasting a bliss of it. Why? We have projected that happiness onto the object and we think with this object I get happiness, but that happiness we are experiencing actually is from within. But we don't realize that. We are like the dog biting the bone and enjoying the blood. So this is the example that the scriptures give us. But this person who has discovered their joy does not get attracted by what he used to get attracted before, and whatever comes before him also he is not attracted because he has already discovered that peace of mind, that tranquility of mind. Now, what is the next stage? So from 51 to 52 to 53, slowly is leading us to from Karma Yoga, tranquility of mind. Tranquility of mind means rejection of the previous way of living. You are no more attracted to worldly desires. From there, what is the next jump that happens? The third jump in verse number 53. Third jump is, look at the first line. Forget the word sruti for the time being. Look at the word from vipratipanna. Vipratipanna. Vipratipanna means all the distractions and doubts that you had in your mind. You see now, your mind is calm and tranquil. You are no more attracted by the material world. What do you do with this mind now? You can't leave it alone.
Focus on God.
You focus on God means what is the next stage we should go to now?
Yeah.
By withdrawing from all unnecessary sensory pleasures, mind is tranquil. We are not interested in all the sensory pleasures. What do we do now?
Meditation.
Before you go to meditation, Jnana Yoga. Now the mind is available for knowledge. Because the mind is tranquil, the mind is at peace, the mind is not attracted by worldly things. So now comes the next stage, which is Jnana Yoga. My mind is now available and ready to listen to this knowledge. My mind is ready to absorb this knowledge. So Krishna says here, Vipratipanna, when the distractions and doubts of various kinds have been cleared, even when our mind is so disturbed, our senses are so disturbed, even when you go and read the scriptures, you will find a lot of confusion also in the scriptures. One scripture is saying like that, one is saying like that, one Swamiji says like that, one Swamiji says like that. Scriptures also say, do your prayers, you can get a lot of worldly benefits. So sometimes you get confused now. What is the real direction of life? What is the purpose of the scriptures? What are they trying to tell me? So you can only clear your doubts and confusion only in one way. How is that? Through knowledge. And how do you gain knowledge? There is only two ways. Forget the guru. There's two ways only. No, I don't say forget the guru. I'll choke this. Stravanam and Mananam. You have to engage on these two parts. Now your mind is available for knowledge. You can't just leave it like that. You have to now start listening and listening and listening. And start clearing all your doubts. And questioning, very important. And Mananam, reflection. So occupy your mind now through that. Through Sravanam and Mananam. So you can see the logical progression now. You have come now to knowledge, Jnana Yoga. Engage in Sravanam and Mananam. And what happens when you engage in this Sravanam and Mananam? Because there's only two ways to overcome this mind. One is Viveka. I know what is real and what is unreal, but that takes time. So meantime, how do I overcome, how do I subdue this mind? There is Vairagya, that is dispassion, which he discussed in this verse 52, when he says, you will naturally not find all those worldly attractions. You won't be attracted to all that. So once you withdraw from that, mind is now available for knowledge. Now what happens? You have Karma Yoga, you have devotion to God, Upasana Yoga, you have Jnana Yoga. You have all the three now. And there is a beautiful symbolic representation in India. There is a place in Ramayana, it is called Triveni Sangam. You would have heard of Triveni Sangam. Where Triveni means three, Sangam means meeting of the three rivers, that is Ganga, Saraswati and Yamuna. The three rivers meet at a point, and that point is a very, very auspicious point where it is said that if you take a dip in that point, at that point there, you are absolved of all sins. Now this is very allegorical. We must understand what is the meaning. What does Ganga represent? Devotion, right? Ganga represents devotion. Saraswati represents
knowledge.
Yamuna represents
action,
Karma Yoga. So you have Upasana Yoga represented by Ganga. You have Jnana Yoga represented by Saraswati. You have Karma Yoga represented by Yamuna. When the three merge, where? In you take a dip in all these three, that's when you reach salvation. So it is an allegorical representation of us going to take a dip where knowledge, where upasana, where karma, all three merge in us, that's when we reach salvation. That's when we reach self-realization. Triveni Sangam, taking a bath in that point, meaning to immerse ourselves with upasana, with karma, with jnana, then only we will reach self-realization. So that is what he is saying here in the same way, that Triveni Sangam, that when you have this disciplined mind, it is available for knowledge, and you engage in Sravanam Mananam, he says, then this buddhi, this intellect, it is, the word achala is used, it is not distracted. All this knowledge is very clearly received, very clearly absorbed. Because your mind is steady, your mind is peaceful, your mind is calm, you can steadily absorb this knowledge. So if you find knowledge so difficult, what do? Clear your mind. How do you clear your mind?
come for class.
No, go and do some more karma yoga, isn't it? Your mind is not steady, you're not able to absorb this knowledge, do more karma yoga, because you have to stabilize the mind. So, this buddhi now becomes nishchala, it becomes undisturbed. And achala means it becomes undistracted. Neither is it disturbed, neither it is distracted. So the mind is now clearing up all the doubts, clearing up all the confusions, and tada. Now again the same thing there, you see line number 2, yada and tada. When you go through this process of sravanam, mananam, and clear all your doubts and ignorances, what happens? Tada yogam avapshasi. Avapshasi means you will attain yogam. Yoga means you will then attain union with God. Through, actually what is telling you here, which is not described in detail, actually here is talking about the final stage. After sravanam, mananam, comes nididhyasanam, which is meditation. So this whole process of karma yoga purifies the mind. Mind is purified, it withdraws from unnecessary wasteful practices of chasing after the world. With this purified mind, engage in knowledge. With knowledge, then come to clear your doubts, clear your ignorance, and then come to meditation. So verses 51, 52, 53 are showing us the pathway from karma yoga to jnana yoga to dhyana yoga, which will be discussed in chapter 6. Right? Ultimately, we have to come to meditation. That is the purpose of karma yoga and dhyana yoga. Any questions so far? No questions? Okay. Okay. So now Krishna has completed whatever he wants to say about Jnana Yoga is completed, whatever he wants to say about Karma Yoga is completed, and he's also told us how the process from karma yoga goes to jnana yoga. So now what comes next? He said whatever he wants to say already. So what comes next?
Questioning.
Now comes question time. From student Arjuna. So verse number 54. Question time from student Arjuna now. He has been hearing and hearing and hearing. He's not said anything. Now question comes from him. And what is that question? Which he asks in chapter 2, verse 54, and then the final 18 verses from 55 to 72, Krishna will give him that answer for that one question that he asked in verse 54. So the last 18 verses are very, very profound verses. In fact, several commentaries have been written only on these 18 verses. Extensive commentaries have been written. So it's a very deep understanding of these verses. Okay, what first is Arjuna's question? He says, Stita Prajna, Stita Prajnasya Ka Bhasha. What Arjuna is asking at this stage, O Lord, if I follow this path of Karma Yoga that you have taught me, and I follow this karma Jnana Yoga path that you have taught me, all this is only what we call information. So you have a lot of information. Over the last so many weeks, you've been attending Gita class. Tons and tons of notes you've taken. You've kept on hearing and hearing. All this is only information. But is information going to help you? Because you keep on storing all this information in your head. Your head becomes a...
Memory.
It becomes
memory
a library, part. Isn't it? Where you store all the books, you know. Library only keeps storing books only. So, we don't just want to store information. We want to use this information to create a transformation. Otherwise, this knowledge is of no use to me. It is no point if I am very smart. I can quote from the Gita. I can tell you chapter 8 here, chapter 7, chapter 6. It's of no use. If I cannot apply it in all my daily transactions, as I meet favorable and unfavorable situation, as I meet favorable and unfavorable people, how do I use this knowledge to keep my mind stable, steady? So this is what Krishna, Arjuna is asking. Stita prajnasya ka bhasha. what is the nature, bhasha means the nature or the characteristic of a sthita prajna. There are two words here. Sthita prajna. Prajna means knowledge. And one who has taken this knowledge and absorbed this knowledge is called a sthita prajna. Otherwise, you are only a prajna. Prajna means you have knowledge, but you have not converted this knowledge into emotional strength. It is only intellectual knowledge which has not been converted into emotional strength. One who has converted this knowledge is called a sthita prajna. So, he is asking, what is the characteristics of such a person? Give me a sort of benchmark. So, at least if you tell me about this person, I will know whether I am progressing to that right goal or am I going backwards. So, the qualities of a sthita prajna are for us to note. And this is a very important question, because in fact, there was one question asked here also at the retreat. How do you measure your life? Success or failure? And it's very important if you think about it, because first when I read the question, even I was confused. Then I said, if on the material path, I can measure my success, right? How do I measure my success on the material path? My bank balance, what car I drive, what type of friends I have, right? How, which place I go for my vacation every year, I go to Bali or I go to Paris, right? So I can gauge my success and failure. So that is material path. But how do I gauge success on a spiritual path? That's what I want to know. That's what Arjuna wants to know. How do I know if I am successful on the spiritual path? Sthita prajnasya ka bhasha. And what is Arjuna asking in the third line, you see three things. Kim prabhaseta. How does this God realized soul, sthita prajna can be translated as a God realized soul. How does he, kim prabhaseta, how does he speak? Fourth line, kim asita, how does he sit? Kim vrajeta, how does he walk? Basically, what he is trying to say is, what is the conduct of a sthita prajna? In two ways. One, how does he speak, how does he walk, means when the sthita prajna is moving around in society, engaging with all kinds of people, with friends, enemies, relations, in-laws, outlaws, right? He's going around with all these people, he's engaging with them. What is the state of his mind? And there will be times when he is, how does he sit means, how is when he is alone by himself without any company, what is the state of his mind? Because many of us, when we have too much of free time, you're sitting too much alone, your mind starts to wander even more. You don't have a control over your mind. Then you start calling up people unnecessary and disturbing them because you need some entertainment. So, a sthita prajna is one who has this stable mind while in the world and while he's withdrawn and he's also comfortable by himself. That what is the nature of the sthita prajna? That is what Arjuna wants to know. So, in the next verse now, verse number 55, I won't start this verse now because it will, I don't want to break away halfway the discussion. It's quite a deep verse. So, I'll just summarize something. From verse 55 onwards to verse 72, Krishna is going to talk about the state of sthita prajna from two angles. One is, he will give the nature of a sthita prajna. In verses 55, 56, 57, he will talk about the nature of a sthita prajna. Then from verses 58 up to 68, he will tell us what are the sadhana that we should do to become a sthita prajna. So we should know first what is the goal, what is the characteristics of a sthita prajna. Then Krishna will tell us the two important sadhanas which we all must do to become a sthita prajna. You see, prajna is just knowledge, I say. But that knowledge which is not absorbed means you don't become a sthita prajna. Example, you can eat all types of nutritious food, right? But if you have a system which has got some problem, that food is not absorbed. That means you don't get the benefit of the nutritional food. You can eat a lot of nutritional food, but if you have an upset stomach, your body will not be able to absorb. So sthita prajna is exactly like that. I have knowledge, all of us have knowledge, but how can I apply the knowledge in my daily life? Then I become a sthita prajna. So there are two disciplines that we must constantly follow, two sadhanas, which Krishna will talk about up to verse number 68. And then in verses 69 to 72, he will again give the qualities of a sthita prajna in a very allegorical way. Okay? He will compare a sthita prajna to day and night in verse 69. In verse 70, he will compare a sthita prajna to an ocean. So we will understand what is the allegory he uses. Okay? So I will stop here. You want to just switch this off. And just one or two things I have to discuss.